Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips, with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com.
These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.
My Family Thinks I'm Crazy, a podcast where I, your host, try to give you some tips on how you can explain all this weird, wild, crazy conspiracy stuff to the people you love most. Because that's what I've been trying to do for the past 10 years with no success.
I've been telling everybody that I give a minute shady. But every time I do, my family thinks I'm crazy. The hollow earth, UFOs, aliens invading. Fluoride in the water, they spray our skies daily. When I talk about these things, they think I'm crazy. There's no escaping anymore, the evil that we're facing. Illuminati mind control, they're sacrificing babies. The end of days, but anyways, my family thinks I'm crazy.
What, they don't want to listen to you? They don't want to listen. They don't want to hear it. They're just like, oh, here we go, Mark. Off again with your...
Mark being Mark again.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's the thing about podcasts is when you're on the air, and it's like therapy, you know? If I can't talk to my family about this stuff, I'll talk to you, Matt, and all our listeners.
You know, just tell your whole podcast.
Yeah. So who are we talking about today, Matt?
I had on my journey was figuring all that out, was realizing that in the early 1900s, there was a doctor named Dr. Royal Raymond Rife who developed frequency medicine. This is all we did in the early 1900s until about 1930s when Rockefeller medicine started to take over and corrupted all of medicine and pushed all of those people doing frequency medicine to the side. And if you continue to use holistic frequency medicine, you would lose your license that was just created by the Rockefeller. So we've been robbed of that knowledge. It's starting to come back, which is great. A lot of practitioners that I know and myself use that for clients. That's the key back to knowing who and what we are, is getting in that same frequency and alignment. So Shilajit, what you want to do is make sure that you're getting a high quality Shilajit. You don't have to buy mine, although mine is probably one of the top three highest quality Shilajits on earth. And I'm very thankful for that. There's a few other ones that are out there that are really good, but you got to know where your Shilajit's coming from. And even if people tell you they know, they have no idea. Definitely don't get it on Amazon. But you want to incorporate that into your life on a daily basis. You want to start taking Shilajit 2-3 times a day. You can't overdo Shilajit. You can't take too much. There's no downside effects. There's nothing bad that's going to happen by taking too much.
And you just heard today's guest, Ron, the man behind Vibe Med X, who joins me, Mystic Mark, here on the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast to talk all about the healing wonders of Shilajit. Thank you for tuning in and enjoy this episode with Ron from Vibe Med X. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. And joining me today is a new friend you may have heard about if you listen to our ads or the ads that I record. He is a friend of a friend of the show, someone that I am very excited to introduce to everybody. The man behind Vibe Med X is joining us. Ron, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Let's get right into it. Tell us about yourself and your story, because everything I've heard about you from Mike Wan says that we're in for a treat today.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, first of all, Mark, for having me on the show. And you're right, we have a great friend in common, Mike Wan, who is spectacular in every way. And, you know, if he's a friend of a friend, then you know you're in good company. So he introduced us, and I've been rocking with Mike for a long, long time, and I appreciate what he brings to our community and our collective. And I'm thankful to be here with you now and on your show and to speak with you and to get to know you a little bit more as well. You know, our community is so interesting, and we were just speaking before the show about how unique all of us are and what we bring to the table, really for the collective, right? Like, we're so important to each other and to be there for each other as support, and everyone brings their own little slice of the pie and their own modality. So it's really just great to be here with you and to talk about what I do and talk about what you do. So let's go. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you. So for folks who have heard the ads, they know that you are the man behind Vibe Med X, and Sheila G in particular is the main supplement, right? So tell me about your own journey with Sheila G. When did you first discover Sheila G?
Yeah, absolutely. So Sheila G, if a lot of your audience hasn't heard of it yet, and they will soon, it's really become the buzzword in the holistic kind of healing space. It's a supplement. It comes from various regions in the Himalayan mountains and in Russia. And, you know, about 10 years ago, I'll start with me and my experience with Sheila G and my ride, right? So 10 years ago, give or take, I am starting to change myself and my health, and I'm starting to pay attention to who I am as an individual, right? Start looking for supplements, start taking all kinds of supplements, spending hundreds and hundreds of dollars monthly, I would say, on all the things that I think are good for my body, right? I got a whole medicine cabinet full of supplements. I then stumble on the Sheila G along the way. And little known then, no one, at least in America, very few people knew about Sheila G at that time, right? So I find it, I start taking it, and I'm like, man, whoa, I'm onto something here. You know, I realize without someone teaching me that I didn't need all those supplements that I had in my medicine cabinet. I just started to not take them as much, and I started to take the Sheila G more. And then I became a connoisseur of Sheila G. So now I'm searching it out. I'm finding it all over the world. And once again, at that time, there are very few sellers on the internet, very few ways to obtain it. So I find myself becoming a connoisseur. And I'm getting it from Pakistan. I'm getting it through India. I'm getting it from Tibet. I find some Russian connections. So I have all these Sheila G from around the world. And each one, it's like fine wines, right? They all have different notes. They all have different flavors. They all have different viscosity. You know, they all vary depending on where they're coming from. And so I find myself just being a connoisseur of it. It became a hobby of mine. And then as years go on and I start really changing my health and really started meeting more people in our space, and then Sheila G starts to get a little footing. Some people start to realize that I know what the hell I'm talking about when it comes to Sheila G. And a friend of mine, I remember at the time, Based in the Plants is his name on Instagram. And he's like, you should be selling this. You're an expert on this, as far as he's concerned, as far as anyone knew at that point. So long story short, a hobby of mine, kind of a passion of mine, finding Sheila G, finding the best Sheila G from all over the world, and then meeting the people who are supplying it, it allowed me then to bring that to market. And so about 4 years ago, I'll say, give or take, I start really getting in the business of Sheila G. And now I find myself one of the foremost experts in North America on importing Sheila G. I import it, I sell it retail, but I import it and I sell it to resellers who sell it all over the country. So many of the bigger Instagram names or the bigger, you know, influencers in the country are selling my Sheila G through their channels, which is great. It's been one of the best experiences I've ever had because Sheila G is such a powerful medicine. It's changed my life and it's changed so many lives around the country and around the world that I've touched and I've been a part of. So it's been a fascinating ride. And that's a little bit how I've gotten into it. And that's where I am today.
Wow. So for folks who are just familiar with it as a buzzword, they know it's a supplement that you can take or apply topically even and see results. Let's get into the actual history of Sheila G, because it sounds to me like you are sort of on the breaking ground side of actually accessing this stuff, but people in other parts of the world have been using this, I presume, for a long time. So what's the history of the use of Shilajit like?
Yeah, so Shilajit has been around since the beginning of mankind, as far as we know it, whatever that is. At least it's written about in Sanskrit text, right? So it goes as far back in Sanskrit text to the times of Buddha, to the medicine Buddha. It was known as the vitamins of the god, literally written in Sanskrit text. It's not me saying it. It's not someone trying to sell Shilajit saying. It's in Sanskrit text known as the vitamins of the gods and the destroyer of weakness. That's what it's known as. And I remember reading in some, oh gosh, I think I was at a Buddhist like temple, which I go to often, and some of the writings, I remember reading that I think the medicine Buddha would touch his tongue and then touch the Shilajit on the mountains, you know, kind of in old, you know, Tibetan lore. But it's written about as far as that goes back. So it's been around for a very, very long time. And in Eastern medicine, they've known about this for ages. We, as often is the case, catch on later and then have a way of kind of wreaking havoc on something as pure and as high quality as this. And that's what's really happened now in our, you know, now the United States is kind of hip to Shilajit. Amazon has Shilajit. Like, it's really, the waters have been really muddied now. But it's been around since the beginning of time, heavily used in Russia. So Russia, the Olympians of Russia have been using Shilajit for decades. They've been hip to this. Their Russian Olympians have been using Shilajit forever. So people in those parts of the world have been aware of it. Genghis Khan fed it to his armies. Like, it's amazing the history of Shilajit that we had no idea. And that's starting to come out now.
Wow. So I've heard about the Russian research into adaptogens. Mm-hmm. And they actually coined the term. So was this a process they're doing all this, you know, intense research and putting that science behind their Olympians so they can win these gold medals? Somewhere along the way, they delve into Eastern medicine, or were they already using Shilajit in Russia at that time?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know the history of Russia as far back. You know, I don't know when they got hip to it. I know that. So one of my main Shilajits comes from an area in Russia, the Altai Mountain region. So I know that the Shilajit, you know, it starts down in Nepal and it goes up to the Himalayan range, up through Pakistan, and then up in the Altai Mountain regions of Russia is where the Shilajit comes from, right? So I know that they've had access to it for a millennia. I don't know when they got hip to it as much as the other parts of the world, but I'll touch on the adaptogenic effect, right? So Shilajit, it's very similar to mushrooms in that regard, where it's really the world's finest adaptogen. Shilajit, mushrooms, they're very similar. They come from the earth. They're part of the mycelium network. There's almost a communications kind of aspect to it. And the adaptogenic effects are spectacular. So I have clients all over the world. I've probably served, I want to say, 330,000 jars of Shilajit last year. Excuse me. So the reports that I get back from people are all across the spectrum. I never tell anybody that it heals anything. I never say, hey, it's going to fix this for you, fix that for you, ever. But the reports I get back from people, because it's an adaptogen and it affects everybody different, are amazing. And they run the gamut of every type of issue that you may have. They help people with seizures. They help people with skin conditions. You know, you and I talked about our good friend Mike, who was in a foreign country and came back with some serious lesions on his body. We were very scared of what the heck was going on. And Shilajit, you know, and he started putting Shilajit on it, and that's what healed it. You know, it helps fix broken bones. You know, now it won't fix your broken bone, but it can help assist you, in replacing the bone structure and things of that nature. So the adaptogenic effects are just amazing. And I hear different stories, different reports from people consistently from all over the world.
Hmm. What I really find fascinating about adaptogens is how counter it is to our Western medical material mechanistic dichotomy. This idea that
something's broken and we need A, B, and C to fix it, and only that, right? Like, everything's broken down to smaller parts, and if we can examine those smaller parts, we can replace those smaller parts. This sort of funny logic, like humans are robots and we can just sort of get the right gears back in place and everything will be in working order again. It's really falls short of the truth when you see something like an adaptogen in action, where it can, you know, essentially conform to whatever need the body has, or apply itself to whatever lack the body is suffering from.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the most amazing thing that I think that I've experienced with this, is where, you know, someone calls me. Oh, one, I have an elderly client, and she started taking Shilajit. She's 70 something. She called me the next day and she said, Ron, I've had heat flashes for 20 years with menopause or whatever the case is that she had. And she said, last night's the first night that I haven't had a heat flash in 20 years. And she said, if I don't have it tomorrow, I'm going to call you back. And then the next day she called me. So it took away her heat flashes, which is amazing, but that's the ailment that she had. Now, I would never tell women that it takes away heat flashes, because I don't know that it does for all women. I just know that it did that for her, you know? And so she's still a lifelong client, because that has helped her kind of overcome that issue that she had. And the list is just endless. I tell you what, lately, a lot of older clients, 70 plus range of clients, I'm starting to pick up a lot more of those. And maybe they have more ailments. Maybe that's why it's so significant. But I'm really hearing some super, super duper success stories from people in that age bracket where, you know, they're starting to decline in life. They have these pains, these ailments that are just keeping them down, keeping them tired, keeping them in bed. These people now, after taking Shilajit, are back up. They've regained their energy, they've regained their focus, they don't have the pains that they used to have, and they're back to living a life that I think most of them thought that it had already passed them by. You know, they were starting to just give in to the fact that they were hit a certain age, and maybe this is just the way it is. So I'm really just so grateful that I can be a part of that experience with these people, because it's life-changing, you know? And I never knew that that was going to be part of it when I, you know, jumped in this endeavor and started. It was really just a way to heal my life. And now I've become a part of so many others' healing process. So spectacular stuff.
All right, let's face the facts. This entire episode has been an ad for Vibe Med X. But where else are you going to hear about the healing powers of Shilajit, and from a guy who's been sourcing it to the United States from Asia before anyone else? I mean, you gotta hand it to a guy like Ron for going above and beyond and then sharing these health wonders, these gifts from nature, with the rest of the world, or at least us here in the United States. So with that being said, no ad break this episode. But sign up for the Patreon, support the show, and pick up some Shilajit with the promo code CRAZY at VibeMedX.com. Follow VibeMedX on Instagram. And I hope to see you at the Shila Jam this summer in Pennsylvania. That's right, it's a festival thrown by VibeMedX, all about Shilajit, health, alternatives, healing, metaphysics. Is going to be a great time. Conscious folks abound, and join me there in Pennsylvania. Hopefully I'll be there. Most likely, 90% sure I'll be there. But yeah, so that's it. That's all for this quote-unquote ad break. I'm not going to piss on your head and tell you it's raining, folks. It is what it is. I love you all. So support the show. Support me. It's been a real tough past few weeks, and with that, we'll be right back to this episode right now. Sign up on the Patreon, patreon.com/mftic. All right, I'll shut up. Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you about my favorite new sponsor. That's Mood. I love Mood because they're providing affordable, accessible, convenient, and transparent cannabis that's 100% legal and grown on small, pesticide-free American farms. That's right, American cannabis for American listeners. And it's 100% legal. They've got a full selection of cannabis products. I was a huge fan of their Tangy flower. Wow, it really brought me back to when I had first tried Tangy, and it was incredible. So if you have any doubts, try Mood for yourself, and I doubt you'll be disappointed. Use the promo code CRAZY and get 20% off your first order at mood.com. That's 100% federally legal cannabis, pesticide-free, delivered directly to your front door in a discreet package. Mood.com, promo code CRAZY, and trust me, folks, you're going to love this stuff. I give it the Mystic Mark guarantee. And Mood is going to back that up because not only do they stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, you get 20% off your first order with promo code CRAZY. Spring has finally sprung, and Hims is here to help you men spring into action this season in the bedroom. That's right, Hims has changed men's healthcare by providing you with access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Okay, don't deal with ED and all the discomfort associated with it alone. ED is not your friend, but Hims is now, and they've got your back. Hims provides a range of doctor-trusted ED treatments like chewable tablets, Viagra, and Cialis, and their generics for up to 95% less. The process is 100% online. Just fill out an intake form on their site, and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships directly to you for free. No insurance needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. So start your free online visit today at hims.com/crazy. That's hims.com/crazy. HIMS.com/crazy for your personalized ED treatments. hims.com/crazy.
The featured products include compounded products which are not approved nor verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality by the FDA. Prescription required. See website for details, restrictions, and important safety information. Prices vary based on product and subscription plan.
I do want to learn more about your story and the particulars, but first, just some more, I guess, general information to get out of the way. Because I think people, when they think holistic medicine, their first instinct is generally plants, right? We tend to think in terms of plants when we think of herbal medicine or holistic medicine. And Shilajit isn't quite a plant at all. It's more of like a mineral sort of soup, I guess, right? For people like me who aren't clear on what Shilajit actually is, where does it come from? It's in the mountains, but what forms Shilajit? How's it created?
Yeah, great question. So Shilajit, it's really a mineral pitch resin. And I'm going to show you some in a second. I'm going to try to get it on the camera the best I can. And it's found at super high elevation on certain mountain ranges. Like I said earlier, going through Pakistan, going through Nepal, up into Russia. So it's only found really at the tops of those mountain ranges, which are gigantic mountains. So in Pakistan, let's say, for instance, you're talking about 14,000 feet elevation, give or take. And then Russia, the mountains are a little shorter. So I think it's about a 14,000 feet range. But they're found in areas that are really untouched by man. Like no one's living in these areas. No one's out there. They've been, so it's plant and like kind of forest matter that's been decomposed for millions of years. And it's just broken down material that's been in that mountain for millions of years. It turns into kind of a rock, kind of a harder rock formation. And that's what shilajit is, and it's raw form. So we can't take shilajit in that raw rock form. It has to be kind of dug up. But sometimes in different parts of the world, it gets a little oozier, you know what I mean? There's different states of it. But for the most part, it's a raw rock that people go out, they forage for, they bring it back. And then there's a process of turning it into the shilajit resin that we can ingest or we can take. And I'll show you a little bit of it right here. So here's a jar of shilajit. And let's see if you can see that. Oh, I think you can.
Absolutely.
So that's what it looks like. I mean, it's a sticky, gooey, right. Like you said, a gooey soup of resin.
Now, on a scale, I mean, that's way more viscous than molasses for our audio listeners. I mean, if you imagine molasses and how slow and sticky it is, I mean, this is even slower and stickier than molasses. So,
yeah, it's like a tar almost. Right. You know, I would say it's the closest thing I could really
Not
think
quite
of.
Not quite a liquid as like molasses or honey would be.
Right. Now, and then you can find some shilajits are a little bit more viscous and they're a little more thinner and they're a little more oil-like. Mostly that's coming from Pakistan. Mm. And there's different qualities of shilajit. There's all kind of, we can go into that then as well, but there's all kind of, you know,
well, and on that note, is it, as a connoisseur, I mean, you know, it's a matter of taste, I imagine, to some degree, but then also, does the quality vary based on how thick it is? I'd imagine the less thick, the less lower quality.
In some cases, yes. So really now this is where you come into the problem of shilajit, where we stand in the United States in particular, because now the market's been manipulated 100%. So I would say 97% of all Amazon shilajit is coming from China. It has fillers in it. It's from people who aren't in the shilajit business. They're in the Amazon business, and they figure out a way to kind of manipulate it, take it over. So really, unfortunately, most people now who hear about shilajit are now going to find shilajit. The most common way to do it is go on Amazon, and they're getting a super inferior product. So they're never going to see the full benefits. Most people are going to take it, go, hey, I didn't feel anything. It didn't do anything good for me. And they're going to stop because the shilajit that they're getting is super low quality. And that's where we are, unfortunately. And so I try to teach my clients and client base and people in our, you know, circle to know where you're getting your shilajit from. You know, you don't have to get it from me, but there's very few super high quality shilajits left out there that haven't been manipulated for money by the Amazon process.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. The way that Amazon and all the other similar sites have kind of taken over small business and product like shilajit, I don't imagine you can find it in the Rocky Mountains, or at least we haven't found it in North or South America yet. Is that one of the issues?
There is some small batches of North American shilajit that I know people have found. I don't know the quality of it. I know that some people haven't, but it's very rare to find. And I don't think it's going to be something that can really take the place of the super high quality shilajit that they've been doing it for generations in those parts of the world. The people that I procure my shilajit from, their parents, 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 this is what they do. They're from a lineage of shilajit foragers. So that's why it's really the processing, and it's really using kind of new world equipment, adhering to old world ways.
Right.
And that's where the magic is. And so in the region of Russia where I get my shilajit, they're kind of pioneers with shilajit. They've really adapted newer equipment, but adhering to old world ways. And that's the difference, because there's ways to cheat with shilajit. So I'll give you this one real quick. This is great for anyone who's really a connoisseur to know. This is the most important information that really no one knows about. So when you take the raw rock form of shilajit, the rocks, to make high quality shilajit, you're going to take about, you're going to use 12 to 15 kilos of the rock to make 1 kilo of the resin that I just showed you. That's the standard. You can get away with using about 4 kilos of rock to make 1 kilo of resin. That's the cheap way. That's cutting corners. That's the lower quality. And that's what they're doing now. So they do that more in the Pakistan, India kind of regions, Nepal. They have a history of, I'll put it this way. A lot of their manufacturing facilities are backyard stills. When you're getting it from that region, you're often getting it from someone's backyard home still. You could still get super high quality shilajit, but it's become more rare and rare and rare just because of the money aspect of it. So in the Russian area, because they've been pioneers and they've been doing this, they're more business. They have a higher business acumen when it comes to shilajit. They've beefed up their production abilities, but adhering to old world ways and that's where you want to be, as far as I'm concerned. That's where I found the highest quality by far coming from that region. So that's the main shilajit that I use in my business.
Fascinating. Yeah, I'm getting sort of reminiscing of a documentary I watched recently about these people in Nepal who they're not in the shilajit business. They're in a similar business that's connected to Chinese medicine. And it's fascinating how, you know, these billionaire, you know, very, you know, expensive, you know, Hong Kong and all these, you know, centers where tons of money is, also pull in all of these very rare items from around Asia because of their Chinese medicinal value. Forget the name of it, but it's like a caterpillar or a bug that turns into a mushroom, basically. Like I think it's cordyceps, actually. So the cordyceps takes over this caterpillar, and then it sort of burrows into the ground and has like a little mushroom tip that comes out. And these Nepalese people, they're on their hands and knees for months, you know, in these fields high in the mountain looking for these little caterpillars and, you know, tons of money for just a pound or so of these caterpillars. And there's this whole business of men who go out and their whole deal is just brokering with the people who are foraging, right? And so they've created a whole system of trade that really, you know, props up some of these very rural, isolated mountain communities. Kind of, I'm getting that sort of sense from what you're describing in Russia, where super isolated. This is probably one of the few, you know, rare things they have access to. And I'm sure you're not the first, you know, person to come around looking to buy some of it, right? So they've smartened up to, hey, if we get the highest quality stuff, we're going to get the best buyers, right? Is that sort of what's going on there?
100%. And then it's really interesting, the Russian connection that I have. You know, I live, my summer home is in Pennsylvania, and we're close to the Amish, and I'm really super clean. I eat no chemical foods, you know, all that good stuff. The Russian area where I get my shilajit from is just like that. They are all about the most super natural, non-chemical, non-GMO, no bullshit type of foods and ingredients, and they're hip to it. That's their lifestyle. And what's interesting as well is, like, I know when I live in Florida in the winter, and I live near a big Russian community, and I go to their Russian markets, and they have a wall of honey, right? You know, pure raw honey. And a lot of it comes from the same region that I get my shilajit from. You know, it's the area that's untouched by man. It's just super clean. So they're hip to the whole natural food scene and really holistic ways of life. And so no wonder they're the ones who have kind of, you know, risen to the top in these type of industries. And so it's been great to kind of work with people like that as well. Like, you know, on my journey finding shilajit, back when I was in my days of just being a connoisseur, not only did I find it, but I created connections with these people all around the world. That's how I even got to this way of business, is because I developed the connections, because I had a pure, sincere interest in what they were doing, and we became friends. You know, and they would show me, I know my friends in Pakistan, they would show me their backyard stills making shilajit, you know, and they would send me video. And the same thing with my crew in Russia, you know, They send me video of them in the mountains. Like they care about what they do, and they were appreciative that I cared about what they did. And so that's how our dynamic kind of started. And then it became a business relationship years later. But it's fascinating to see how they operate and to see that that's how I'm trying to live as well. So my journey has led me to this point where, you know, finding myself, finding my health, all that leading to this and kind of figuring out, you know, the ebbs and flows of my life along the way. So it's been a fascinating and wonderful and interesting ride. And then I get to meet people like you as well, you know, all along the way. It's just, there's no better way to live in this nutty ass realm that we're in than doing what we're doing, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure talking to podcasters like me is nothing compared to what sounds like being an Indiana Jones of your own health and going out to these remote regions and meeting people who have such a deep reverence for nature and its gifts, like Shilajit, which, yeah, I think that point you presented about it being the vitamins of the gods and how that's in the Sanskrit texts, and it sounds like one of these sort of fabled, you know, fountains of youth type of thing that, you know, often people in the West exploring Asia were not privy to. These things were kept, you know, secret from explorers for probably good reason. So I want to hear about your journey, because, you know, you were motivated to go and seek this out, maybe unsatisfied with what was available here in the States. What motivated that? Were you having health issues? I mean, because I'm somebody who I've had some pretty serious accidents, I guess I could say, you know, broken bones and lost some teeth. And that's made me really vitalize my diet, change major things about how I live, because, you know, I didn't want to go through this pain with my teeth and my bones. I realized, like, oh, I'm clearly not eating the right foods if I'm having these issues with my teeth. And so, yeah, it's changed my life considerably in the past 4 or 5 years. Luckily, I didn't have to leave the country to figure it out, but I want to hear about your journey, because, yeah, this is something I can relate to.
Yeah, right. And it's funny because, you know, you and I got to the same point, however we got there, but it does come back to food. It comes back to what you're eating, you know? And I think, you know, that hit me first until, you know, I really had my awakening and then my learning and understanding and going down all the rabbit holes to where we are now and realizing, you know, from my standpoint, that the food that we're eating is all poison, and it's probably intentionally poisoned for us, you know, but it all comes down to food. And you know, we can go into different avenues with this, but I don't even think that we're meant to eat food as humans. You know, like during my research and what I'm understanding is the food's at the top of the pyramid for all of our ailments. And the food's poison, the air is poison, the water's poison, the frequency's poison. You know what I mean? There's so many things that we're up against. And when I finally figured out that food was number one, and then also once you master food, then it's a whole different world opens up for you. Once you can master food and not be driven by what your mind is telling you that you need to eat or whatever cycle you're in, then you start to break free. Then those chains start to kind of, those shackles start to come off, you know? And that's where I got at a certain point, but it took me a long, long time to get there. You know, I mean, this is a lot of trial and error and going through a lot of pain that I put myself in life. But I'll go back to the kind of initial question. You know, my journey has been an interesting one. And I know me and you have talked a little bit about it, and Mike probably, gave you some info on me. But so I go back, you know, I was living in the matrix of normal life for a long time. I've been a lifelong entrepreneur. I've got to have some life experiences that are pretty unique and a little different from maybe your average Joe. And a lot of that was a lot of highs and goods, and it also came with a lot of lows and bads, you know. So I got into the entertainment industry, I don't know, let's just say the early 2000s. And I started to get to mingle with a lot of the who's who of the entertainment world, sports figures. I became a partner with the NFL. I actually owned, in a partnership with the NFL, the after party for the Super Bowl at every Super Bowl city. So I imagine owning the Super Bowl after party, you know, that the who's who of the world was in. So that thrust me into a way of living that was very unique. And I certainly didn't have a lot of ways to keep me from indulging and enjoying it, right? So I'm out of control, pretty much. I started really having living a life that's a party. And it was super fun. It was super cool. It was awesome. But it also took a big toll on my body and my life, and my way of living and my emotional state. So I went years and years and years of just living a party, flying around private jets and everything that goes along with that. And finally kind of burnt myself out after several years of that and came crashing down and burning. So all of that, going through that, kind of the ebbs and flows of a crazy life. And I'll say it's similar to, I wouldn't say it's a Wolf of Wall Street, but it would be the Wolf of Main Street, right? Where I was kind of just your average guy who was thrust all this money and this fame and this kind of limelight and ran wild with it. Crashed and burned, and then kind of had to claw my way back. And then now I'm starting to realize what I've done to myself, my body, what I've done, you know, like, what is life about? You know, I start having these breakthroughs and really kind of a spiritual awakening, and then start to pay attention to my health more. And what am I doing? What are we doing? You know, I start going down all the avenues and the rabbit holes of what this realm is. And so that's really the shift that happened to me that changed my life completely and really gave me a whole different perspective on life as well, you know, and I'm so thankful. And I think for a long time, I kind of beat myself up on what I did in my previous life. And then going down these avenues have helped me realize that how valuable that was. And that was the opportunity for me to learn and to grow and to change and to be thankful for the highs and lows that I had in my life and see the value that it brought me. So I often say, as I teach a lot, I'm on a lot of shows, you know, you don't get to this point in life, you don't, I don't, a lot of us in this our circle, you don't get here unless it's a bumpy ride. It's often a bumpy ride to get you here in this circle, you know, and I think now we've learned to appreciate everybody's bumpy ride. You know, like, I don't look at anybody in our kind of our collective and go, man, whatever their past is, we applaud it. We can say, hey, we can give them a hug. We can welcome them. We can thank them for the road that they had to get here. You know, we don't look down on each other because it's just part of the process. And if I didn't have that bumpy road and I stay in the limelight, I stay whatever I'm doing in the world of entertainment, I'm super rich, I'm super wealthy, I'm doing fine, I don't get here probably, you know? So it's like one or the other often, you know, it doesn't have to be, but it seems to be the case a lot. Like, you know, I can stay in that comfort zone. I can stay in that lap of luxury, or I can come here and I can start to see through the illusion. I can start to see through the matrix. I can start to see life for what it is, and I can start to appreciate it. So it's kind of in a nutshell of where I came from a little bit and how I got to here. And I'm super thankful now to be able to see through these lenses that I have now, because it's a much different way of seeing life, and I'm super appreciative of it.
Yeah, it's great to hear that example. And I think a lot of people who maybe are still caught up in the illusion, the Maya of society and culture, you know, they aspire for these things that it sounds like you transmuted. You've kind of shown that, hey, I lived that life and it actually put me back further in a rut than I could have been, you know, and now seeking this alternative lifestyle seems to have a positive effect on your life, your karma, even potentially. But you kind of alluded to food keeping us in this lower vibration, this lower consciousness, contributing to illness. There's a sort of instinct that people have that, you know, well, again, going back to that mechanistic way of thinking of our life and our bodies, oh, well, food, if we don't have food, we'll start to, you know, lose energy and then we'll die, right? This whole car analogy or machine analogy that people are stuck on. I see it with my own family, you know, they're like, oh, I don't feel good. Well, I'm going to eat chicken noodle soup or this or that. Me recently, you know, over the past 6 or so years, just listening to my body, I haven't been ill really ever. And through the whole pandemic, wasn't ill once. And my instinct is if I'm not feeling good, I don't eat anything.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I see these, like, you know, people around me who their instinct seems to be the opposite of that. And it, they're ill more often than I am. So just logically, it seems like that really backs up what you're saying. So what kind of, how did this kind of dawn on you? Was this just trial and error? Did you just start eating less naturally, or certain foods that you started to eat gave you the energy to eat less? Because I think that's a big part of it, is we eat so much crap that our bodies are just kind of at a loss. We're operating at a loss when we should be at, you know, neutral at the very least.
Yeah, 100%. And I'll tell you this. So this, that's a great question, a great point. So as I'm going through my journey, so during all those periods of time, I'm drinking heavily. I'm eating, you know, I'm eating everything, everything I could ever. I was super, I was probably 50 pounds heavier than I am now. I used to get gout all the time, all the time. And at a certain point during my kind of healing stage, I'm like, I don't know if you know about gout, but when you get gout, it usually hits your big toe and you can't walk. It's one of the most painful things you can ever have. And so I found a study, and that's a whole nother story about even the information on gout that's incorrect. So I found a study that said everything they're telling you about gout is wrong. Do this instead of that. And I said, you know what? I'm going to try. I'll do anything. So I stopped sugar and carbs. That's what it said. Gout medicine will tell you to stop eating steaks and stop eating kind of fatty foods. It's the exact opposite, the reality of it. The reality is that sugar and carbs are going to really cause gout more. So I stopped sugar and carbs. Now, I love sugar and carbs at the time. Who doesn't, for the most part? In the matrix anyways. I haven't had gout since. That was the first step for me to realize I'm onto something. So I stopped taking sugar. I stopped eating bread. I stopped eating anything like that. And then, so that's my first kind of big aha moment, and starts to lead me down a path of a different way of living and a different health and a different diet. And that's before I really had my breakthrough, spiritual breakthrough, but that's part of my path, and it's a significant one. So now I don't have gout anymore, which is great. I'm off sugar. I'm off breads and cereals and all that good stuff. Getting off sugar, it may be the, one of the biggest pieces of the puzzle. Sugar is just the biggest drug on the planet. I mean, you know that. I'm pretty sure that the sugar industry and the sugar fix and the sugar addiction we have is out of control in this country. So getting off sugar was one of the first keys for me. And then now I start to have my spiritual awakening. I'm starting to tap into people in our community. And I was a little different, where I started to go and meet these people. Like one of my good friends, the Black Airbender, he's in Miami. I go start visiting him. And this is right around the pandemic time as well. Well, right before it, I would say. So I start to visit these people that I find unique on Instagram. And I'm like, man, these guys are doing something. I want to tap into this. And I start to go hang out with them all around the country. Black Airbender is an interesting one, where he hasn't eaten solid food in 5+ years. He juices, he feeds himself on pranic energy from breath work from the universe, right? And I'm like, well, this all sounds crazy to me, but I'm going to go and I'm going to figure out what the hell these guys are doing. As I start to hang out with a guy like him in particular, not really fully understanding it, but just being around him and starting to change my life, starting to meditate more, starting to do breath work more, starting to do the modalities that I'm seeing from people who are successful in this way of life, it starts to switch on me, not by them telling me, but by doing it and being there. I remember I was in Miami a lot and just kind of feeding off the negative ions from the ocean and the sun and the breath work. I notice I'm less hungry. I notice that I don't have to eat as much. And no one's telling me this, but my body is. So I start to eat less and less and less. And then I start to do a little fast here, a fast there. And then I realize, oh my God, I'm fasting and I have more energy than I've ever had. And I start doing a longer fast. I think I've done like a 24-day fast before, just liquids, juice. And I'm working out 2 or 3 times a day when I do that. Because like you said, we don't need to eat. We think we do. We're conditioned to think we need to eat. But the food is the biggest key to break that grip that it has on us, because it's not feeding us, it's poisoning us for the most part. You know, I mean, the food that we're eating is literally poisoning us with the dyes and sprays and everything that it has. but it's really weighing us down and we just don't need it. And I only know that by living it and having the experience. And that's been fascinating for me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the biggest sugar, carbs. I mean, you really nailed it. And I am guilty, folks. I'm guilty for sure. For a long time, it was sugar in coffee, recently switched to honey there. And other than that, I guess it would just be the juices now, which I try to go for only organic juice. So I don't think there's added sugar in that, but probably some of the drinks I'm drinking should probably just go with Black Airbender and juice them myself rather than paying the extra money for the can and all the other crap that comes along with buying it pre-made like that. But yeah, I gotta fess up because I'd feel like a complete phony if I just sat here and said like, oh yeah, breads, sugars, they're terrible. Meanwhile, yeah. I look over and there's a loaf of bread on top of my refrigerator. Yeah. So yeah, I definitely agree. But I will say, you know, one of my big wake up moments was learning that most of the bread that Americans eat is completely different than what bread actually originally is and the rest of the world eats. I mean, some parts of the world, they don't eat bread that rises, but we're supposed to be eating live cultures with our breads, you know, and that because of the Industrial Revolution or World War II or what have you, in America, they just switched it up and, you know, white bread is completely artificial. But I had the opportunity to work at a German bakery for a few years and learned about sourdoughs and whole grain breads. And there's definitely a difference there. So, yeah, it's
huge.
It's not all bad. And I think it's really just the industrial commercialized crap that we have in America. You know, for the most part, it's like a drug, you know, and the entire, you know, whatever you can get at a gas station or your typical, you know, lower grade grocery store. I mean, you have a very hard time finding a nutritious meal in a place like that. But that, unfortunately, is where like 60%, 70% of Americans get, you know, big majority of their food is from gas stations and these low grade supermarkets.
Yeah, it's amazing. And even the seed oils, you know, the seed oils and everything. I think seed oils make up like 60%, 70% of the American diet. Seed oil, like just oil that's in all the ingredients. It's really shocking, you know, when you really look at food and what's in it. And you even look at food that we think is healthy for us, you know, like they're pushing a whole kind of non-meat agenda. And if you look at whatever is in a, you know, what the Impossible Burger or anything that's kind of in a box that's made to replace meat, it's amazing. It's just chemicals. It's just so wild how we've been conditioned what to eat and what we think is healthy and the whole thing, you know. It's just ridiculous. And so I always find myself, I go back to the Amish. Whatever the Amish are doing, that's got to be good, you know. And so if you ever have a question, do what the Amish do. Find out what they're doing and copy that, because they are living the old world ways and there's no chemicals and they go against the grain of whatever our government has done to us. And they don't have any disease. They don't have any autism. They don't have things that we have with every damn kid that you see on the street, you know, or if you go to a school. I don't know how many, one out of how many kids have this or that, but the Amish have zero out of how many. And, you know, they're just doing it right. So that's my policy. Do what the Amish do.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to learn what the Amish diet looks like, what their major staples are. I try to eat meat, but I've just kind of moved away from eating pork in general, not for any religious reason, but I get, my instincts tell me that it's not a good meat to eat and that maybe there's something to that religious, you know, culture and why certain religions avoid eating pigs. But also, and this is a total side tangent, but there was like an ancient myth or something that pigs are actually
like a cousin of man. Like we're like so closely related to them. And there's like these pig men in certain ancient cultures. So you start looking at that and you're like, whoa, why are they pushing bacon and ham and all these meats on us? You know, like, I'm not against eating meat. I think, you know, there's definitely certain animals where that's not the case, but the pig is one of these strange kind of, it's like, let's just leave them be. I mean, it's not even a real animal. They should be boars.
Yeah, it's half man, half pig. It's funny. I was going to say the same thing where that's been coming, bubbling to the surface again, like the whole, it's like a human sacrifice, you know, the half man, half pig. And I mean, there's something to that, you know, whatever they're doing in this realm and these rituals and these ways that they have us doing things that we just don't know. You know, the more that you dig, the more that you go, there's something. I don't know what it is. I don't claim to have the answers, but there's something to these things. And, I've been kind of removing the pig as well more recently, even though I love it.
On that note, though, you know, the pig, whether it's actually, you know, so close to a human that it's causing some sort of spiritual damage to us, you know, we can maybe speculate on that. But one thing that's a little bit more direct and harder to ignore, and maybe you're familiar with this, but sugar, the way sugar is boiled, white, I think just like your classic white sugar, not raw sugar, they use bones to do that. Animal bones generally, but there's historical cases, particularly the Waterloo Sugar Factory, which started digging up the battleground where Napoleon's troops perished in the Battle of Waterloo. So for years, I guess this was because of the rationing in World War and all the, you know, obviously the issues going on in Europe at the time, they couldn't import sugar or the bones or whatever to create the sugar. So they just started digging up the battlefield and using soldiers' corpses for the sugar process. I mean, how insane is that? And, you know, again, that's just coming from some TikTok guy that, you know, I saw on a podcast, they were breaking down this TikTok and who knows where that information comes from. But I have heard that before, that bones are necessary to process what we think of as like refined sugar. So on that same line of thinking with the pigs, like, why are we ingesting something that contains a dead person? You know, that just seems like necromancy to me.
Right. Yeah. And what's the point? It's funny because I also have been reading or seeing more about human bones, and they're using it for some other concoction as well, you know? So all these things are kind of bubbling to the surface, you know? And even in some of the vaccines, I mean, they have human, you know, fetus, embryo, whatever they have. It's just a tiny touch, but it's always coming back into us, you know? And so it just makes you wonder what kind of ritualistic items are going on behind the scenes. And, you know, I think you and I are probably similar. Well, we don't know the answers, but we know, it's, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. And there's a whole lot of smoke going on in this realm right now. That we're all starting to see with a little more light, you know. And, you know, I don't know. I'll keep saying I never know the answers. But the stuff that I see from our friends and, you know, from our kind of world makes a whole lot more sense than the history that they've taught us at this point. The history that they've given us, I can say that makes no sense now. All the crazy shit that I hear on Instagram or from friends of ours makes a lot more sense. It makes a lot more sense. I have one of my favorite books right here. I'm bringing some things out. The Cabbage Patch Babies, like the whole depopulation, repopulation thing. I don't have the answer, but it makes more sense than the narrative and the history that we've been given, because that doesn't add up anymore. You know, that history that they gave us, really history in general, doesn't add up when you really scrutinize it. None of it does. Yeah. The World's Fairs, all these buildings, Tartaria, these cathedrals, these churches that have been left behind, all that stuff doesn't add up when you put a microscope to it. The crazy stories that I hear make a lot more sense. So, you know, that's where we are.
Yeah, Mind Unveiled definitely has turned a lot of things on its head. And yeah, I appreciate their work. They're very interesting. I haven't looked too far into the Cabbage Baby thing, but I should after seeing you have the book there. It looks like, yeah, it's worth it. But I was thinking about the nonsense going on with bees right now. And yeah. We just had Brent Knudsen on the Tinfoil Hat podcast talking about how, you know, there's beekeepers who are trying to use pharmaceuticals to figure out what's wrong with their bees. And he comes along with this frequency modulator and has so much success that it almost, you know, it sounds amazing. I didn't finish listening to the episode, but that's another example of where, you know, modern science, health has really taken the ball and dropped it and fumbled it really severely. Like they're putting all of these bees in jeopardy, trying these, you know, concoctions on them, when really the answer was so simple and so non-invasive. You know, we don't need to go and throw a bunch of chemicals at these creatures. We just need to create a harmonious environment for them to live in. I mean, they're, you know, he kind of demonstrated that, and sounds like what someone can do on a human scale to their own world. You know, we talk about frequency devices, and, you know, when you stop taking in these foods from factories and with all these different chemicals, you're starting to purify your energy, purify your, you know, resonant quality as a human being. I mean, we're vibrating just like bees are. We're really no different than any, you know, living organism in that way. So if it works so well with bees, I think it's something we ought to try. I know that's totally a different tangent, but let's get practical with Shilajit here, because I want people to buy Shilajit and know what to do with it, because it is a little different than maybe what we're used to as far as supplements go. So as far as working Shilajit into your daily routine or weekly routine, do you recommend people, you know, what's the best practice you recommend?
Yeah, absolutely. And let me just jump in. You hit a great note. Maybe that'll be another discussion for another time, but we are all beings of frequency. And in my home and in my practice, I practice vibrational medicine, frequency medicine. One of the biggest breakthroughs I had on my journey was figuring all that out, was realizing that in the early 1900s, there was a doctor named Dr. Royal Raymond Rife, who developed frequency medicine. This is all we did in the early 1900s until about 1930s, when Rockefeller medicine started to take over and corrupted all of medicine and pushed all of those people doing frequency medicine to the side. And if you continue to use holistic frequency medicine, you would lose your license. That was just created by the Rockefeller. So we've been robbed of that knowledge. It's starting to come back, which is great. A lot of practitioners that I know and myself use that for clients. And that's the key back to knowing who and what we are, is getting in that same frequency and alignment. So I'm really glad that you hit on that, which is a great point. So Shilajit, right? So Shilajit, what you want to do is make sure that you're getting a high quality Shilajit. You don't have to buy mine, although mine is probably one of the top three highest quality Shilajits on earth. And I'm very thankful for that. There's a few other ones that are out there that are really good, but you got to know where your Shilajit is coming from. And even if people tell you they know, they have no idea. Definitely don't get it on Amazon. But you want to incorporate that into your life on a daily basis. You want to start taking Shilajit 2-3 times a day. You can't overdo Shilajit. You can't take too much. There's no downside effects. There's nothing bad that's going to happen by taking too much. I've had probably 500,000 clients. I had one adverse reaction, 1 in 500,000. And that was just, he just didn't like it. I don't know what it was, but I had one kind of negative situation in 500,000. So you want to incorporate that into rising, put it in your coffee if you drink coffee, put it in some kind of warm water. It mixes really well. And add that to your life. Shilajit doesn't go bad. It's just like raw honey. It will never go bad. It's so high quality. It's the only raw honey, and Shilajit is never going to go bad sitting on your table forever. And that's really says a lot about what this substance is. So incorporate it into your life. start taking it, do it for about 6 weeks on, 2 weeks off, and see what happens. And it's really, it's a stepping stone to getting your life back in alignment is what it is. It's not going to cure everything, although it might, but it's really going to be a stepping stone. So, you know, if you're still eating McDonald's every day and you're doing things that are really damaging to your body, this will be a great step, but you really kind of need to be getting yourself in motion, you know? And if you're not there yet, this will help you. But if you are there, then you're really going to see the effects. Like if you're kind of starting to take care of your life, you're getting your life back in order, you're going to see greater positive effects from Shilajit. Yeah. And that's what's up. That's really where the magic is. And then you can slowly not take anything else. You don't have to take all those other supplements and things that you have in your medicine cabinet. You won't need it. Shilajit replaces them all and at a higher quality level and at a higher vibration for your body.
Absolutely. And I do want people to buy your Shilajit because it is so high quality, and I can attest to that. I have some myself, and we have a promo code set up so people can save a little bit when they do pick up some from your website. So that's linked in the description. Now, this is the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast, and I'm not going to ask you what you might think I'm going to ask you, but I am going to ask something that I think is very important and relates to the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy title, because I think anybody listening to this, they're probably already with us. They're on the same page. But what's going to happen is somebody's going to get really excited. They're going to buy Shilajit and they're going to say, "Mom, Dad, I got this medicine. It's going to help you." And their mom or dad's going to look at it. They're going to be like, "What the heck is this crap? It's from where? What? Are you crazy? My doctor's not going to let me take this." Right? So what would you say to people like that? Because I'm that person. I want to be able to give this to my grandmother, and she's super picky. You know, I think it would help her.
Yeah.
And, you know, Our families aren't always on board with these sort of health ventures, right? So what advice do you have for people in that position?
Yeah. And I tell you what, so, you know, when I had my breakthrough in my spiritual awakening, my family certainly thought I was crazy, crazy as fuck. You know, they're like, "What?" You know, my mom in particular, "What are you doing? You know, what, you're in a cult, you know, all this stuff." She thought I was crazy for a year. And, you know, but now she's not. I think at a certain point, when they realize that this lifestyle is beneficial, right? We're better people. We are healthier. We are happier. We are doing better things. Then they start to kind of change their tune a little bit if we're lucky. So my mom was the same way with Shilajit too. She's like, "What the hell is that?" So I said, "Hey, Mom," I remember one time I said to my mom's 80 something now, and I was like, "It's going to help you look younger." And she's, "Oh, well, let me try that." So that got my mom hooked. My mom started taking Shilajit maybe 3 years ago. When she starts getting low on her jar of Shilajit, my phone starts ringing because she wants to have her Shilajit ready to go. So my mom, who's probably 83 now, give or take, she has been taking Shilajit for a long time and loves it. Thought I was crazy in the beginning, but absolutely loves it now. And even my kids, when they were younger, my kids were probably, I don't know, you know, 8, 9, 10-ish when they started taking Shilajit. So young kids can take it. Older people love it now. But what I tell you, the best thing is whatever ailment they have, go, "You know what? I got something that may be able to fix that." And a lot of older men, parents, great for testosterone. I got a group of they're pastors in the South from Black churches. They started taking my Shilajit. And the lore between them of what it does for them in the bedroom has been wild to hear. So now I got pastors all from the South that all know each other that hit me up all the time. And they go, "Hey, I need to get some of that Shilajit."
Wow.
To me in the bedroom. So they love it. So there's so many things that it's helpful for. If you tell somebody in your family that it'll fix whatever ailment they have, it probably will. And it'll probably get them going. You know, that's what I found the most. Like people, they don't want to hear what's good for them. They want to hear what may fix something that they have a problem with, you know? And I don't ever say it's going to fix it, but I go, "Hey, it might help." And often it does. I've been really shocked that more often than not, it helps with whatever problem they may have. So that gets them going. And then once they realize that it does help, they don't ever stop coming back because they just want to fix that problem. So it's been amazing to see that aspect of it.
Yeah. It's funny how the way we have to market these things to our own family members, you know, in a way that is the result of the Rockefeller scheme, but it, you know, in other parts of the world, it's more like, you know,
hey, the medicine man or the shaman or the healer is giving you this thing, we trust them implicitly because that's just what we do. And really, it actually is an honest relationship where they can trust that person. Go figure. Here in the West, we have so much scrutiny over these things because how many people have a horror story from, you know, unfortunately, snake oil, or in most cases, I think it's not the alternative cures that run people the wrong way. It's the mainstream medical malpractice system that just writes it off and, oh, well, you know, sorry, we made a mistake. You know, your loved one passed away in this procedure. Oops, you know.
Yeah. Like, sorry.
Yeah. But we trust them implicitly.
Right. Over and over.
Right.
Over and over.
Right.
All day. It's crazy. Yeah. Because I have this medicine. You know, I have tons of it. This is what I do. I have this. This is the business that I'm in. For the longest time, and still now, like friends of mine or people that are close to me, I'm like, here, you can just have the medicine. And I find that the more I give it away to people, the less they don't take it, you know, and they don't appreciate it. Where people from all over the world seek me out, you know, reach out to me, ask for advice, you know, value the energetic exchange. And the people that I know that are closest, you know, they can care less, you know. So right. It's interesting, and it's part of the conditioning. And
I think,
but I find it all fascinating. You know, now I just sit back and I just observe, you know, and I try not to get too attached to whatever the emotions are, and just kind of laugh at it and just keep going with the flow, and you know, keep doing what we do, you know.
Well, it's unique in the Western world that we have this sort of mindset about it, but it almost feels like the higher the price of something, the more valuable, like you sort of, you give it more reverence, right? You're like, whoa, like I really have to work hard for this. It must be incredible. And that almost adds to that placebo healing effect. And I know, again, I'm not reducing it down to materialism by saying, I think, you know, that's part of our conscious co-creative abilities, that we not only put our own energy and intention into these things by respecting them, but then in turn, because that respect is given, these plants, minerals, different aspects of our environment can give us truly that healing, that gift, that is that energetic exchange when we have that respect for it. It's almost like, you know, it seems like that's built into certain cultures, whereas in the West, we have such a skeptical air around alternative medicines that we don't really appreciate that energy exchange the way we should.
Yeah, absolutely. The psychology of it all is just so fascinating. You know, the whole, whatever we're here, whatever we're doing, whatever this whole system is, it's been done so well, you know, like the methods of the madness. It's like, I applaud it. I'm like, wow, the Matrix has done such, it's freaking fabulous, you know, like what a great job they've done to humanity to enslave and kind of trick us, and just to see it all play out is just, you know, it's interesting. And so I find myself, you know, just appreciating the people who appreciate it more, and understanding that the people who don't, it's okay, you know. I just, yeah, it's all part of it, and that helps us even break free a little bit more and kind of live our lives, and you know, and go about our way. And I tell you what, one other thing I want to talk to you about maybe on our next episode is this book, Leaving the Trap by Isabella Green. Spectacular. It goes hand in hand with a lot of our kind of discussions of leaving this trap, getting out of this reincarnation cycle. I want to talk with you about that another time as well.
Absolutely.
As well as the Ropeworm Protocol, because there's a lot of good stuff for us to dig into, I'm sure.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, Ron, this is a great introduction to Shilajit, and I really, really appreciate you joining up to sponsor the show, and I hope that can help spread the word and get more people interested in Shilajit. And now, thanks to you, it's no longer this mysterious product that you might get ripped off, you know, picking up some on Amazon. Don't even bother, folks. Go straight to the links in the episode description, wherever you're listening to this show, Spotify, Apple, what have you. VibeMedX.com is there. Click it. Boom. You have the world's
top quality Sheila Jeet, in my opinion. So thank you, Ron. I appreciate everything we've talked about today. Great introduction. And yeah, please come back on anytime. We'll get into some of those topics, and I'm sure you have some more stories. I love just learning about other places, so I'd love to learn more about where the Sheila Jeet comes from and your crew of people out there in Russia and the people you met in Pakistan. But until next time, thank you all for tuning in. Check out vibemedx.com for more on the world's best Sheila Jeet. And until next time, immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now. And that was our conversation with Ron from Vibe Med X. You can check them out at vibemedx.com, vibemedx.com/crazy. Get a discount and support this podcast, the podcast you know and love. Support me. I could use it now more than ever. At a very difficult Mother's Day, my grandmother, who is 96 years old, is passing away, and it's very difficult for me and my family because we love her so much. So thoughts and prayers to her, and if people listening would kindly share their prayers with my family, that would mean a lot. So with that, thank you for tuning in to this episode of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. Today, May 14th, 2025. And until next episode, immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now.
Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips, with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.